Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it's a Monday, and if it's a Monday and it's this time, we bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday, and we cover just about every aspect you would want to know about food, and it's one of my favorite times of back to work. Arthur, nice to talk to you again this morning.
Always good to talk to you. And you know what I want to talk about today? Actually, I had two subjects in mind, but then after thinking about them, I realized they cross-pollinate. One was, this is an expression that I dreaded 25, 30 years. People are saying, oh, this tastes like restaurant quality food. And the other thing is, you know, homey food. So this all crosses, by the way, with a man named David Annis, who is he's a food columnist for the New York Times. I met David many, many years ago. I think it was right after he left being a chef at Chez Panisse in Berkeley, you know, Alice Waters' place. He was the chef there for like 25 years, or one of the chefs, because it's a very collaborative kitchen there. I'm not sure anybody puts a name on anything. Anyway, I met him because we were both on faculty at the Culinary Institute of America's Journalism a program, which was held out in Napa Valley, interestingly to me, in the old home of the Christian Brothers Winery. That's where the CIA has its California outpost. And as someone who was friendly with some of the brothers, it was nice to see. Anyway, back to David. So David writes a weekly column for the New York Times. I'm not sure it has any name other than David Tanis. And I follow him because his food is home, let's call it, not home quality, but home cook friendly. Because David, you know, Chez Panisse is sort of, people go there and they're disappointed because what they get is not fancy food, but they get simple food made with great ingredients. So that's what I do at home. I make simple food made with great ingredients. And David's column is often about that. And so I trust his recipes too. So I tend to make them. But last week, I guess this is last week, yes, March 1st, there was a recipe for baked lemon pudding. So I look at this recipe, and he learned this, by the way, in the head note above the recipe, he explains that he learned this from a pastry chef named J.R. Ryle, who is most recently at Ballymaloe, where I have been in Ireland. Ballymaloe is a cooking school, restaurant, inn, a cookware shop. I mean, they have a lot of things going on at Ballymaloe. But I stayed overnight and I ate a sensational meal of traditional Irish food, which can be sensational, with great ingredients grown right there. And, you know, so anyway, I was interested in this recipe. Because I don't actually recall any particular dessert I had at Ballymaloe, but everything was wonderful. And so I look at the recipe and I said, this sounds very familiar. It ends up, it's the same recipe, more or less, that I have in one of my first cookbooks, which is called What to Cook When You Think There's Nothing in the House to Eat. And that book was, I'm looking it up, I don't even remember when I wrote this, 1992 was the first edition. That's 30 years ago. And I wrote What to Cook when I was living in West Cornwall because you had to be well stocked or at least stocked. And because there were no supermarkets around, there was the general store for a short time. Then that closed, and I had to go to Sharon to go shopping or Torrington. A long haul to go get necessities. So I often would shop actually on the way down. But in any case, I did force myself for, a year to just cook with 52 ingredients that you could store, lemons among them. And right now, lemons should be, at the least expensive of the year. Fact is, I have bought several bags full of lemons at a really good price recently. They're not big lemons, they're smallish lemons, but still, they were, a good sized lemon is at least 50 cents, not a dollar, here in Brooklyn. These were much less expensive. And I've been doing a lot of lemon things. Now, when life gives you lemons, there are a lot of things you can do with them. And I sometimes am forced to cook with them because I like looking at them. So they're in a big bowl on the kitchen counter, but then they start drying out a little bit. You certainly can't use the zest, but you can squeeze, even when the zest is all dried out, you can still squeeze them and get good enough lemon juice, good enough for a whiskey sour, or the various lemon desserts that I've been making. Now, I've talked about Pawsett many times, but I'm going to do it one more time because I think everybody should have this little recipe in their pocket when they're not only when they have lemon juice they have to use, but if somebody comes by and you want to have something a little special, this is it. And Pawsett is nothing but cream curdled and with lemon juice curdled by the acidity of lemon juice, and of course you have sugar. So I put in a little saucepan 1 cup of heavy cream with 1/3 of a cup of sugar. I put it over medium heat and stir until it starts boiling. And in fact, you have to be careful here not to have it boil over, because cream will boil over. And then you take it off the flame after letting it simmer for 3 minutes. You take it off the flame and put in 3 tablespoons of lemon juice. Don't use much more, maybe, you know, three tablespoons plus a few drops if you have extra few drops. That's all. Stir it in. You pour it into, I poured it into 4 little silver cups that I have, or little pudding dishes are good, little ramekins, whatever, or even a glass. And it will firm up at room temperature, but you want to refrigerate it for a few hours. That's one thing I do with lemons. And then I made this baked lemon pudding. Now, I did not do, I haven't done this in so long, but I looked at my recipe, and it calls for you baking the pudding in a bain-marie, in another pan with water, hot water in it. And David's recipe from the chef at Ballymaloe did not say that. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to chance it and see what happens. What happens is the edge of the pudding, let me explain the pudding. What happens with this little recipe is the bottom becomes lemon pudding and the top becomes a sort of meringue, cakey, crispy top layer. Now, if you do it without a bain-marie, you're going to get browned edges where the pudding topping meets the dish. And if you do it in a bain-marie, it all comes out, you know, without a uniform. Let's just call it. I don't think it's necessary to put it in the bain-marie. It's sort of a pain in the neck. So here's the recipe. This is so easy. And as I said in my book, which is called What to Cook, when you think there's nothing in the house to eat, I guess you can get it on Amazon. Anyway, lemon sponge pudding. Here's my mixing. First, separate two. By the way, my recipe makes a little bit less than David Tanis's recipe, but it was enough for, let's say, 4 servings, which is plenty. This says serves 4 to 8. I can't see getting 8 servings. Or yes. So first thing you want to do is separate 2 eggs. You're going to use the yolks to make the base, and then you're going to blend, you're going to fold in at the end the whites. Happens that my electric hand mixer has died. And I decided to tackle this just doing it by hand, and it was fine. It was easy. And I must say, my mixing technique is easier than the chef from Ballymaloe. He's doing something very, very old-fashioned. I have nothing against it, but I think mine's old-fashioned enough. So separate the eggs, and in a mixing bowl, I use just a wire whisk, beat the egg yolks until they get light, and then add 3/4 of a cup of sugar, 1/4 of a cup at a time, and it's going to be very, very thick, but blend each addition in well. Then keep beating until it's, you know, the egg yolks get smooth and light in color. Typical recipe direction. And then for the lemon, I used, my recipe calls for 3 tablespoons of, here's something. No, it actually says a scant 1/4 cup. Here's something. I don't know, lemons must have changed size over the years because I don't know any lemon that's going to give me, no matter how large, it's going to give me a scant quarter of a cup. And usually I get about 2 tablespoons of lemon juice from a normal lemon. So you're going to want 2 lemons, the juice of 2 lemons, or a scant quarter of a cup, which you will mix with the grated zest of one of the lemons, giving you about a teaspoon of lemon zest, and beat that in. And also 1 tablespoon of melted butter, and 1/4 cup, very little, of flour. And then the batter gets 1 cup of milk. I'm going to repeat the ingredients. It's very easy. This is all there is. 2 eggs separated, 3/4 cup of sugar, a juice of, well, let's say a scant 1/4 cup of juice, a lemon juice, a teaspoon of grated lemon peel. I use my microplane for this. 1 tablespoon of melted butter and 1/4 cup of flour and 1 cup of milk. That's it. You pour that, well, you want to beat the other two, the 2 egg whites that are left from separating the eggs. You want to beat them until they're relatively stiff and firm, and then fold them into the base batter. And what's going to happen, you pour this batter, and by the way, an ungreased pan. I used an 8-inch square baking dish, which I use for a lot of things, got to say, for my handiest. But, a similarly sized dish. If you want to put it in a roasting pan filled halfway with boiling water, go ahead. I didn't bother. And then you want to bake it for in 350 degree oven for 45 minutes. Mine, I think it was done really much, 42 minutes. So look at it at 40 minutes and see. It shouldn't be too brown on top. It will get brown along the edge. It'll be puffed up a little bit. It'll probably calm down when you take it out. In fact, you want to let it cool for about 5 or 10 minutes before you serve it, but it is delicious served warm. It's also delicious served at room temperature. It takes on a different aspect then because the pudding, of course, gets a little heavier. I've made this with other flavors, but I always fall back on lemon. So I make my lemon posset, I make lemon sponge pudding, and recently when I was getting really good, inexpensive lemons, I made lemon curd. Now, you can buy lemon curd in most supermarkets, but there's nothing like homemade, And this made way too much for me, but it's a nice gift item. And in fact, I gifted about half of this, about a cup, a little over a cup, in a little jar. I gifted it to my next door neighbor. She was thrilled. Eats it on crackers, she says. I eat it on crackers too, but a lot of things you can do with lemon curd. Put it on, I mean, it's really good on. Anyway, to make a lemon curd, which is to say, this very thick, like lemon spread, we'll call it, you need 4 eggs, and you're going to whisk these eggs, 1.5 cups of sugar, until again, they're very thick and lemon colored. In with the whisk, blend in your lemon zest. I would say the zest of one, if you want two lemons, the zest of 2 lemons, and you're going to juice 3 lemons to make, I don't know. You're going to juice enough lemons to make 3/4 cup of juice, however many lemons that takes. It's going to be more than 3 lemons. Years ago, the lemons have changed, obviously. By the way, even in Tanis's recipe, I noticed he was, what's he calling for? He's calling for 2 large lemons, and that's going to make 6 tablespoons of juice. Now, even that, I find a large lemon these days does not have that juice. Anyway, whatever it is, you measure it out, it's easy enough, and it's 3/4 cup of lemon curd. So you whisk with the whisk still. Now you've just got sugar and egg yolks. Whisk in the juice and the lemon zest, and pour that into a. I use a very heavy, a heavy saucepan. I don't bother with a double boiler. I've done this so many times. I know the indications for when it's done. If you're nervous, put it in a double boiler. Put it over moderate heat, and as it's heating up, add 4 tablespoons of butter, 1 tablespoon at a time, and keep stirring it until each tablespoon is melted in. So 1 tablespoon, stir, 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 another tablespoon, stir, stir, and I'm using my whisk all the time. And continue stirring until the whole thing has thickened. Now, an indication for me, whenever I'm doing something like this, even a custard, is there's going to be a pale foam on top, on the surface of your product. And that foam will dissolve and disappear into the curd as it becomes at its most thickened point. So when the curd is all of the same uniform lemon color, you're going to be stirring slowly with your whisk, making sure, of course, to get into the corner. Take the pot off the heat and let it cool, and then refrigerate it in a jar. This is precious stuff, I gotta say. And when you buy it in the store, they charge a precious amount too. So lemon, we use a lot of lemons around here. I can't serve roast chicken without lemons, not inside the lemons, but aside from the lemon. We like lemons on our avocados, and we like looking at lemons. So I'm always having lemons around. I don't know why lemons have become expensive. This is supposedly the height of the harvest, but in fact, the average price around, I don't know. Have you looked? You don't look at prices.
I don't look at prices.
I know you don't. I don't know why. I mean, it's not like I can't afford a 50-cent lemon. I sometimes feel like my grandfather, who was a waiter in a kosher dairy restaurant, and he came home one day absolutely shocked that they raised the price from 25 cents to 50 cents for a bowl of mushroom barley soup. He wanted to know who was going to pay 50 cents for a bowl of mushroom barley, vegetarian, no less. So that's how we're pri listen, where prices have gone in the 80s. I remember at a dinner party in the 80s, a man who was a deceased friend of mine whose job it was to eat in restaurants for his firm so he could tell them where to go to eat. And he said, I can't believe it, but the average check is now $40 to $50 in a restaurant. Now the average check is more like 80 to 100.
You go out and get a hamburger, you go out and get a hamburger at a fast food place, it's $9.
Well, let me say around here, a hamburger in a regular hamburger joint, not fast food, but a good hamburger is $18. So, yeah. Anyway, this brings me to the David Tanis and I thought about. I this expression, restaurant quality food, really bothers me because I grew up thinking the only time you go to a restaurant, let me say this, not the only time, but that restaurant food is not going to be better than home cooked food. But somebody serves it to you, they clean up. There are reasons to go to a, and it could be festive and fun. So there are reasons to go to a restaurant, but not necessarily for the food. So when somebody says restaurant quality food, I don't buy it. Oh, by the way, I don't buy home cooked quality food because I want to know who's home. Not everybody cooks equally. So yeah, but I some of my favorite food writers have used this expression lately, and then they give me a recipe that's totally home cooking, which is what I expect from them. And but they say, oh, this is going to be restaurant quality. That's not my measure. It's not my measure of quality that it's restaurant quality. And these days, especially, restaurants to me have become very disappointing. Not that they weren't disappointing when for 35 years I was reviewing restaurants for a living. They were, people didn't understand that more often than not, the restaurant was disappointing. And the worst part, when you're a restaurant critic, you got to go back and eat again to make sure it was as disappointing the second time as it was the first time. Nowadays, if a place is disappointing, I don't go back. I don't bother. I wish I had that luxury years ago. fact, I just went to a relatively new restaurant in my neighborhood that I was very interested in. Somehow it escaped my notice. It's a steakhouse, and we don't have any steakhouses here. The best part of it, it's open for lunch, too. So there were a couple little things about the experience, not the experience, about the food that I could quibble with. But overall, it was so much fun, this place. And my company, that I was very good too, that I certainly have a good impression of the place and will go back again. So, you know, there's so many factors, but restaurant quality food is not number one. Today we're having Arthur quality food. I've roasted some red peppers. Red peppers from Mexico seem to be all over the place and at a very good price. So I've been buying them and they've been very good, sometimes as good as height of summer red peppers, truly. So I roasted a bunch of red peppers and then I opened up a package of chicken thighs that I was going to cook. And in the end, I opened up the package and it was mislabeled. I ended up buying a boneless, skinless chicken thigh. So my dish that I was going to make has totally gone. I got to figure out how to combine these two things. There are a lot of ways. I'm not going to be, just haven't given it too much thought yet. It's early. But I might make another baked lemon pudding. I was considering trying David. Oh, speaking of David Tanis, here's something that I have made now, a David Tanis recipe that I have made 3 times already. And it's not something I normally would make even once. It was cookies. And they are, he calls them triple, you can look this up online, triple sesame tea biscuits. They're a very, they're basically a shortbread made with tahini. I've been using tahini. I have to see if I can find Chinese sesame paste instead of the Middle Eastern sesame paste, but this recipe works great with tahini. So I remember it by heart because I've made it 3 times now. 3/4 of a cup of butter, that's 1.5 sticks of butter, creamed with 3/4 of a cup of sugar. When it's all nice and creamed together, add 1/2 cup of tahini, beat that in, and then beat in 1 teaspoon, maybe a drop more, of toasted sesame oil. That's your dough. Oh, a flour. How about flour? 2 cups of all-purpose flour. I've made the dough and then decided if I bake these cookies, I'm going to eat them all, so let me refrigerate the dough for another day. And I did that, and they came out superb. And actually, I left the dough in the refrigerator for as long as 4 days, and you can still bake them off. So if you can't be trusted with a couple of dozen cookies, actually, I make them a little small, so it comes out to 30 cookies for this amount of dough. And you roll the dough, more or less walnut size pieces of dough. For me, that was a very heaping teaspoon I used to scoop out the dough. Roll it into balls, and then you flatten the balls slightly in a bowl of white sesame seeds. I keep meaning to try this with black sesame. I think I like the look. I'm not sure I'd like the taste. We'll see. In the meantime, I've only used the white. And you need a significant amount. You need a couple of ounces worth of sesame seeds to do the whole batch. So I put the sesame seeds in a bowl. I put my little balls of dough in the bowl, squish them down a little bit, make sure the edges get some sesame seeds and put them on a piece of parchment paper. You can fit a good dozen on a regular cookie sheet. If you have a big, big cookie sheet, you can probably do all 30. And that's it. And then it goes into a 350-degree oven for, I think David's recipe said, David Tanis in the Times, I think he says 20 minutes, but I find 18 to 19 minutes. Hey, do not touch these cookies. Soon as they come out of the oven, they're too fragile. They have to firm up a little bit, and that takes at least 10 minutes. So if you want to do 2 batches of cookies, I would lay them out on parchment paper. Then you can slide off the parchment paper when one is done and slide on another piece of parchment paper and bake off the batch. Don't try to take them off the sheet or the parchment paper immediately. And then after they cool down a little bit, they're firm enough you can handle them. You can even stack them. They're way too dangerous for me to keep in mind. As I said, I've made this recipe three times already. But I did give a lot. I did give a number of them away. Everybody I've served them to wants to go walk away with them, so I'm happy.
You're finished already? Oh my gosh! I was
well, already. It's a half hour.
I know, but I get listening and I get ideas in my mind when you were talking.
All
about...
right, well, talk to me. You're always welcome to butt
but
in.
I don't want to interrupt. But I
no,
always...
it's not interrupting.
When you talked to me about when you talked about the lemon curd, I remember as a kid, my favorite thing my grandmother used to make to me was a Boston cream pie. Okay. But
one
then,
of my favorite things.
But then that was replaced when she made a lemon pie with the meringue on top.
Ah, so
I could just scoop that lemon out and eat
right.
all that.
Okay, here's the deal. I did a little research on this. I don't think this is an Irish recipe, although maybe it is. But that, you know, the one that David wrote about in the Times is from Ballymaloe. But I did a little research, and this is in my 1931 Joy of Cooking as lemon sponge pie. And you take the ingredients I just gave you, and instead of baking them in a dish, you bake them in a pie crust. And according to the little research I did, it works with an unbaked pie crust or by the way, the pudding takes 40 minutes. In a 350 degree oven. So in 40 minutes in a 350 degree oven, a pie crust should crisp up. So I've never done this in a pie crust, but yes. So your grandma must have gotten this from some general American cookbook. I think this is totally American.
Oh, I don't know, but it replaced, and I still love Boston cream pie. And that, but it replaced Boston cream pie. It was just like smooth to
well,
eat.
It was way easier, way easier. As somebody who only within the last year made a Boston cream pie, let me tell you, it's a bit of a project. So we have a bakery in the neighborhood here called Dough, Doughh. It's actually a donut shop. I love their donuts. As I walk by the shop, I have to avert my eyes because I don't want to be tempted. Huh. But they do have outside a chalkboard telling you what the specials are for the day. And if they do have the Boston cream donut, I'm in there. So it's a very large donut, and it's pretty expensive, $6 for a donut. But it's very splittable, so I don't have to feel totally guilty. I divide it in half and share it with Bob, but it's a custard donut, you know, a puffy donut stuffed with unbelievably good light custard and then coated with chocolate, very good chocolate. You hungry enough now?
Sounds great.
Maybe I should bring some up to Sharon for you. But every time I've gone over there to actually buy one of these, they didn't have them that day. But I do. It's on Vanderbilt Avenue in Prospect Heights, and I do shop on that avenue and eat on that avenue. So I do walk by the store even when I'm not eating donuts.
All right.
All right. Well, anyway, when life gives you a lemon, make lemon posset, lemon curd, lemon sponge pudding, or I actually, by the way, do make lemonade. I'm a big lemonade fan. I use at least one lemon for a 12-ounce to 16-ounce mug I have, and a packet or two of Sweet and Low, and filled with ice water, no ice. Very good.
Yep, absolutely.
I try to drink a ton of water, so that's one way I get a little more water in.
That's right. All right, Arthur, I'll speak
All
to you
right,
next
well,
week.
Until next week.